This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Hi, SG2 Perspectives listeners. We are trying something fun and maybe a little dangerous. On May 22nd, we're hosting a live podcast where you can join us for the recording of an episode. Our relationship right now is a little one-sided and we want to meet you. So we'll put you in my chair. You can ask us questions, share your insights, or just heckle us. There's more information in the show notes, but you do need to register so you can get a link to attend. Hope to see you there.
The past 2 years was a little more on the current state. Here's what we're dealing with. Here's the workforce shortage. As we've come out of that and we've seen the data from Kaufman Hall, margins have returned. They might not be as high as they were, but margins on average have returned to the positive side. How do we think differently about the future delivery of healthcare?
Welcome to another edition of SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host this week, Bill Woodson, and I am joined by the amazing John Becker, Senior Vice President, Data and Digital, also the leader of SG2 and my colleague for more than 15 years. John, it's awesome to have you here. Today, we're here to talk about a recent meeting you were at that Vizient hosts every year with CEOs from around the country. One meeting was about large integrated delivery networks. The other meeting was a more broad meeting of CEOs. Let's dig right into the messages and themes. Well, in the first quarter of 2014, what was the mood? Optimistic, guarded, fearful of the economics?
Thank you for calling me amazing. That is the first time ever. So I appreciate that. What was the mood? It's cautious optimism or bounded optimism. There's a little repair to do. There's an acknowledgement of the current state as we've come out of the pandemic and financial situations are not as dire, but they're not exactly back to where they were. So there's an acknowledgement of where we are and some of the constraints. But I think there's optimism that there are strategies and opportunities in the markets for these healthcare leaders to be successful moving forward. I like that term, bounded optimism. It acknowledges where we are and some of the constraints, but it also looks toward a brighter future.
Let's start first with the large IDN group. Those CEOs, what were the topics that they were most interested in talking about?
There was maybe 15 CEOs from a number of different organizations across the country. It was fully geographically represented. One of the questions at the end was, what are you most proud of from last year? And what are you focused on moving forward? What are you excited about? Three or four groupings came out of this. One was these diverse CEOs talking about the community investments they're making. Those community investments crossed over a number of different areas. Some were around addressing needs in the marketplace in terms of employment and raising the tide, focused on education. Can we provide support for the workforce we need in the future through community college, LPN education, et cetera? A really novel story of one organization that is using a former middle school principal to go and visit middle schools and educate on healthcare careers in the future to get them excited about that. That was a really interesting approach. Another one was one of the hospital CEOs has an administrative building that needs to be rehab, retrofitted, torn down. And rather than building another admin building, he's looking at building out affordable housing on his campus, not only for the local community and the workers in the hospital, but also to make it so that the residents have affordable housing and can come to his hospital. This idea of community investment from the CEO or the chief strategy officer on down, I like because it's addressing needs that they have real time in the workforce, but it's also helping to develop the communities that they work and serve in terms of health equities or disparities.
The workforce theme, we've settled into what reality is going to be, and shortage doesn't even capture the word anymore. We have what we have. Having said that, we're seeing health systems invest heavily in building their own pipeline, whether expanding the education programs they already have or developing new ones, going further, whether it's upstream or downstream, to the high school level and engaging students in their career paths and getting them excited about working in healthcare. That feels new, powerful, and in the self-interest of the mission and moving the workforce challenges forward.
I'll quote our colleague, Dr. Manny Hernandez. Manny likes to say, we don't have a workforce problem. This is your workforce. Get used to it. How do you enable the workforce to do more? How do you become an employer of choice in order to draw workforce into the healthcare system or from other healthcare systems? That community investment was one area in this CEO pre-meeting. Another was interesting dueling stories of how they've used transformation teams. This might be fun given your travels, Bill. This idea of putting teams of strategy operations together to think about transforming the organization. One CEO said they shut down that transformation team because after 2 or 3 years, the leader of that transformation team, the champion, the executive sponsor, could not come up with one key success. Why are they spending time doing it? Another one out west reported that transformation team for them dropping $90 million to the bottom line and thus about 2%. You've got these stories of transformation teams, depending on how they're executed, oriented, or time freed up for them, getting very different results. And it plays into number three. A number of the CEOs talked about refocusing, and I'm going to call this scorecarding. You would call it inside out thinking from the year ahead, Bill. This idea of rallying around key integrated metrics of success and making sure the leaders, the next level down, the frontline workers all understand what they're shooting toward, making those scorecards and the metrics visible everywhere with clear ownership that is providing clarity around where they should be focusing and they're getting better results. And this goes into the people respect what you inspect. It's such a simple thing, but a number of the CEOs reported just doing better scorecarding and providing better visibility was getting everyone united around where they should be spending their time.
That sounds like a really old idea. What's new about it?
Sometimes either old is new or we get away from pure focus on execution. And that's a really good example of execution. There was another story of a very good healthcare system realized they didn't have a good, consistent understanding across the board of their vision and strategy. And it was as simple as a one-pager that highlighted the vision and this multi-year strategy that the CEO would use in every meeting, whether it was a board meeting, a leadership team meeting, if they were having a topic discussed, how does it relate to the vision or the strategies that we're deploying? And if it didn't, why are we talking about it? Such a simple thing, but it goes toward focusing on the controllables, which is executing your strategies and providing visibility to the performance as you go through.
As you think about the combination of the two meetings, would you say most health systems are working on the same things, or did it feel like some were in a very different mode of operations, whether it's growth or cost cutting or something in between?
It coalesces around very similar things. There's a handful of strategies. What separates those doing better from those doing not as well is execution of the strategy, plus some market mix in there. But almost everyone's focused on cost reduction. That's no surprise. Almost everyone's focused on addressing workforce. The really good organizations, they are also focused on growth. You don't have to focus only on cost and workforce. You can also, while you're doing that, focus on growth opportunities. That's the power of and, that we don't have to think in a more limited view, but in an abundance view, which is we can do this and that. You can cut costs and make investments in growth. If anything, by cutting costs in the right way and controlling costs, you can free up dollars to invest in growth areas that make sense in the future.
As it relates to the larger meeting, the Health Executive Forum, you and I were at it last year. It wasn't guarded optimism. I think it was uncomfortable. Thematically, what came across this year that felt different to you?
Not surprising. There was a pretty good AI overlay on it. How do you use technology differently? They did a good job of reflecting on where we are while also focusing on what we need to do differently. The past 2 years was a little more on the current state. Here's what we're dealing with. Here's the workforce shortage. As we've come out of that and we've seen the data from Kaufman Hall, margins have returned. They might not be as high as they were, but margins on average have returned to the positive side. That's creating dollars to make investment and begin to think about growth again. These healthcare systems are focused on acknowledging where we are, but also how do we think differently about the future delivery of healthcare? It had a more positive feel, but also a focus on we are where we are. What do we do differently in the future? How do we apply new technologies? How do we share best practices around what other healthcare systems are doing in order to all do a better job of serving our communities?
Let's go back to the word you used before, which was transformation. Define that a little more for us. Is that care delivery? How does that apply?
It's care delivery as one. How do you think differently about care delivery? It does, for some organizations, delve into what businesses are we in. We've got non-operating revenue or alternative revenue streams. How do we think about that? It's the portfolio, really. If we're purely focused on care delivery only, can we maintain a margin or do we need to be thinking about partnering with suppliers, with PEVC, in order to make investments to provide dollars to fund the mission as well? I don't want to go dual transformation, but the transformation is about building the chassis, building the revenue streams in order to be relevant moving forward in the market. And that can be care delivery innovation. It also can be what other businesses are we in order to fund the mission.
I find more and more I'm in discussions about revenue diversification and or partnering with an investment fund or private equity or venture capital. We have another publication on that topic coming out in the next couple of weeks. Did you get any specific stories on that revenue diversification point of view, what systems might be doing?
No, they didn't delve too deeply. There were some stories. Your California systems are partnering with big tech all over the place and doing interesting things from Stanford to Sharp to others. They're partnering their local communities with the employers, the big tech that are there in order to apply new technologies. That's interesting. I won't name the healthcare system, but they think about their revenue in four revenue streams, which I found interesting. It's the hospital, the physician group, the payer arm, and it's the alternative revenue streams or the investments they make. That's an interesting way to think about it also. Some of our healthcare system members have one or two of those. When you have all four, you've got a diversified portfolio of revenue streams that helps you weather storms a little bit better. Every healthcare system should be looking at that to understand, can they diversify just a little bit?
It makes sense. And the meeting kicked off this year with John Halamka. He is the god of IT and healthcare. He is amazing. And he gave a perspective on AI. What were your takeaways from that discussion?
Amazing speaker, amazing person, physician leader. He translated things incredibly well. He had a couple of good quotes. One is that the open generative AI overnight revolution was 50 years in the making. This is not something that new. It's math, not magic. I like that one too, a reminder of where it comes from. He also was very practical. He's president of Mayo Platform. Mayo's application of AI is not going to be large IDN or community hospital or other academic medical centers' application of AI. They're really de-risking AI for other systems by doing the work and the trials. He thinks the applications that make sense right now, not surprisingly, are things like inbox email response drafts to ease the burden on what's called pajama time for the physicians when they're at night responding to those emails. Documentation, ambient listening, coding, revenue cycle management. The point is, the less risky applications of AI make sense for everyone. Let the Mayos of the world try out the clinical stuff as we figure it out. He also made the comment very directly. Right now, across the board, the time for AI to be applied to treatment and diagnosis, his answer was no. And he asked the audience, is medicine predicting the next word in a sentence, which is what generative AI is, or is it predicting the next event in a care journey? Those are very different things. AI is not ready for that. I liked that as well. He was practical. It was bounded optimism again. He was optimistic, but he was stating the reality that this is not ready for prime time for what people are thinking, which is clinical applications, but it is absolutely here to help solve the problems of workforce capacity, revenue cycle, coding, physician data entry, where we can ease the burden and solve the problems that are here today.
I ask, are you piloting the application of voice recognition that fills out the chart? And to the extent we've talked to health systems about it, they're wildly excited about it. It's not quite ready for prime time, but the potential for saving time for a physician is extraordinary. And I was with a physician over the weekend, and she went to her own physician for a visit, and he was piloting the technology, and he showed her the note at the end of the visit, and she said it was really close. It was excellent. We're not too far away, and we hear numbers of the percentage of physicians' time that's spent on that work. It's not doctor work. It's absolutely frustration.
We are taking our own medicine here. We're talking about and bullish on AI application to help solve problems in healthcare, focus on exactly what John Halamka has talked about. But we're looking at AI application in all the work we do across all of our workforces, Vizient, to do a better job for our members. So we do coding, we do service, we do intelligence research. How can we arm our teams in order to work top of their license? These are really good questions we all should be asking. I don't know about you, Bill. I hope you have, but I have Microsoft Copilot on Teams. And at the end of a meeting, it does an excellent job of summarizing next steps, key findings, and who's responsible for what. That's a great example in real life for us of AI enabling us. This is here. The question is, are we going to apply the learnings? And another conference I attended, an AMC CEO summit, one of the physician leaders at Michigan was asked the question, will AI replace clinicians? And he said, no, AI is not going to replace clinicians, but AI may replace clinicians who don't use AI. I like that quote.
Pretty good. Let's change gears. And I've been to a lot of organizations already this year. We seem to inevitably fall into the topic of systemness, whatever that means. And it means different things to different organizations. And it could be structure. It could be culture more often than not. It could be incentives. To what extent did that term come up at the executive forum?
It came up often. Given that this was a collection of CEOs and the panels, very often the systemness came to culture. A number of them mentioned that the CEO is the cultural guardian of the hospital or health system or the chief cultural officer. So I think they focused on that for obvious reasons. This idea of systemness, a couple of the organizations outright said, you can have different cultures. So we can have different ways of doing things as a multi-state system or as a system that spans a state across different geographies. You can have different cultures and different ways of doing things from a leadership standpoint or a board standpoint. When it comes to the experience of care or quality, they needed one standard. So they were allowing some differentiation or variance in certain areas of the system, but they wanted to make sure that other areas of the system really did hit the system level or become one way of doing things. And that was really around quality. Local strategy was talked about a couple times, that deploying strategy in a local setting needs to have some ability to twist and turn based on local market needs. So that was a little more local versus corporate. I found interesting. The other is two or three large system mergers were there. You have the St. Luke's and the BJC's. You've got Frederick and Theta Care, a number of organizations literally going through M&A and looking to find that systemness answer, magic wand for 2024 and beyond. Most of them were focused on what that systemness means, which should be quality, lower cost, better outcomes by coming together. What are you hearing? I'll flip it around. Not that this is my podcast, it's yours.
Frustration that we've put all these pieces together, and in most cases, they're not working well together yet. And so there's a tension between centralizing and decentralizing. There's also been a good bit of leadership turnover, and then sometimes that's a good thing. There's a new leadership team that's trying to figure out what they want to do with the larger, ever-growing organization. But it's a long process, and I don't think it's a competency that we've had in the industry. No one kind of comes to the job knowing how to do this. You mentioned M&A. Our friends at Hoffman all tell us the deal flow remains strong. The Federal Trade Commission is being resistant. What else did you hear about M&A in the meeting?
A couple of the panels were asked outright, what does the future look like in 10 years if you were back on this panel? Most had things to say around better care coordination, better access, IT enablement, but a number said we're going to be bigger. M&A is still there. There's a question around the why behind M&A, but there does seem to be a feeling of in many markets, gaining scale is a good thing. It's not always a good thing, but I think there's some bullishness on that M&A question or comment. I'll go back to systemness just for a second because I think it plays in. Success and incentives, that's key. A number of the CEOs in other meetings and travel you and I have been on, getting that incentive right for the leaders is one of the answers if I had to really get at it. Care distribution is a good sign of systemness. We talk about care distribution all the time and using that system of care in your system properly. Those that are most forward-thinking are considering all of their assets and are realizing they don't need to be all things to all people at all hospitals in a local market and are thinking about distributing care in a different way, whether it's inpatient to outpatient or inpatient to inpatient to provide centers of excellence. And we're going to see more data on that, by the way. We're doing some work around volume and quality at the service line level to understand exactly this. And there are areas where volume and quality are clearly related, which would call towards systems using their systemness to raise the value and quality game by concentrating care at certain locations.
John, as I've been to these meetings through the years, I think I've detected what makes a CEO now is different than what made a CEO 5-6 years ago. Is there a set of qualities that you're noticing that stand out now?
You and I have met a lot of operating CEOs that are very good at operating a hospital. That's clearly necessary on the leadership team. However, there's a generation, a set of leaders that are much more focused on the culture and the people and evangelizing, advocating for the healthcare system at the market or the national level. It probably is a different set of skills that assembles a team to have others do what maybe the CEO has done in the past so that that CEO really can be focused on the people, the message, the vision, the market, the politics. And I don't want to play the politics too much, but I do think that is bringing people together, uniting them. This culture thing, and we're both leaders at an organization, SG2/Vizient. We lead, manage, motivate people, hopefully, when we're doing our jobs right. The success factor here, especially in an environment where the workforce is constrained for all of us, is to be a sticky employer or a magnetic employer that draws the talent in. The last presentation was from Mark Boom, who does a great job at Houston Methodist. He is clearly focused on culture and people. We heard the same thing from John Corris at Tampa General recently. He's clearly focused on the people and ensuring that the people that are providing the care are well taken care of and feel appreciated in the work they do, because both believe they can amplify the success of the organization through motivated, engaged employees.
John, the thought about strategy, our leader, Barth, who talks about a one-way versus a two-way door, could you explain what that phrase means and how it relates to the industry right now?
I'm challenged by Barth Sundaram, our leader in Vizient's data and digital business. As we think about strategies, execution, decisions, there are one-way doors and two-ways. One way is you make the decision and that's it. You can't go back. Two ways are most of our decisions and strategies and investments. We're going to try something, and if it doesn't work, we can always back it up. That could be structure, that could be investment, that could be growing in a new area. That came up a couple of times without using those words at this conference. This idea of failing fast, of being willing to try new things and being willing to push the status quo in different ways, transform, whatever verb or word you want to put in there, realizing that if it doesn't work, we can always back up. You can try something with a leadership structure as systems come together. And if it doesn't work for that culture, you can always try something else. That's a two-way door. The way it was explained, it was think like a goldfish. And I was confused at first. And then it was explained that goldfish have very, very, very short memories. That's the idea of, look, if you try something and it doesn't work, just move on. We need to have short memories and not dwell on the past and really focus more in the present and the future, which I appreciated. So let's all think like goldfish.
It was a powerful speech in Ted Lasso, if you watch that series. Great way to end this podcast. John, thanks for your time today. We'll repeat this probably later this year. Safe travels.
Thanks so much for listening to SG2 Perspectives. As always, I really value your feedback, input, comments, or ideas for episodes, and you can reach us at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Additionally, I recommend that you check out some of the other Vizient podcasts, which cover a range of clinical and operational areas. Those can all be found at vizientinc.com/podcasts.